Good evening, and welcome to a one-night stand with the big bands. Good evening, everyone. This is Arnold Dane. Tonight, the music of the Elgarts, Les and Larry, and an interview with the latter, Larry Elgart, an interview recorded at the New York City offices of Agent Willard Alexander just a couple of weeks ago. A one-night stand with the big bands, brought to you by WTIC and by Russo Chevrolet, across from Bradley International, where you'll find quality cars and dependable service at fair prices. Welcome to special guest Larry Elgart on a one-night stand with the big band. Les and Larry Elgart. The names are used in concert so often that we seem to forget the brothers are two very separate, distinctly individual, and highly talented men dedicated to the music business. The Elgarts are unique in many ways. For one thing, they're virtually the only big band veterans to successfully organize a highly stylized orchestra in the 1950s and make it a huge success. We'll find out how in an interview with Larry Elgart, tonight on a one-night stand with the big bands. Larry Elgart's orchestra and After You've Gone. We'll meet the man who led that band in just a moment. These days, it's almost impossible to give your car all the care it needs to stay in top condition without professional help. That's why it's important to buy from a dealer who feels service is just as important as the sale. When you buy from Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks, you've found a dealer you can rely on. Besides employing a staff with over 70 years of Chevrolet experience, they've recently enlisted the aid of an electronic engine analyzer. This highly sensitive testing device attached to your engine will inform Russo's trained mechanics of any problems with your car. And all this is done right before your eyes at the touch of a button. This new addition to their already complete service department has made Russo unique in the area. Now they can offer you better, faster service than ever before. And that's something every car owner can appreciate. So for quality cars and dependable service, visit Russo Chevrolet, just 10 minutes from Hartford. Take the Bradley exit from I-91, then the first exit to Russo Chevrolet, across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. Now let's begin our conversation with Larry Elgart. And to start at the very beginning, Larry, where were you born? I know it was in Connecticut.
Yes, Arnold, I'm from New London, Connecticut, and Les is from New Haven. Family moved around different towns in Connecticut in our early years. And so that explains us from being from two different towns.
Which of you is the older?
Les is older.
Does he know you're saying that?
He thinks he's younger. But, he's actually 5 years older than I am. That's actually, I was quite young when we lived in Connecticut. I think the family moved to New Jersey when I was about 5 or 6.
When did you first express an interest in the musical field?
Well, I guess a lot of it was due to Liz, but I distinctly remember what happened to me. I was living in Pompton Lakes at the time, and I had a little crystal set. Though those were very lean years. I am now 51, so I'm talking about right in the heart of the Depression, you know, in those early 30 years. I had a crystal set, and I used to listen to band remotes that were on the air then. I would hear, I heard this, the Goodman Band from someplace, and the Fletcher Henderson Band, and I absolutely became passionate about that kind of swing and that kind of music. And I started taking clarinet lessons. I guess probably the first exposure I had to the instrument was Goodman. And then I just listened and listened and listened, and I couldn't really do anything other than think about music and think about what it was, how much more I wanted to do with the instrument. And it wasn't until, I guess, probably when I was about 14, we moved into Teaneck, New Jersey, I started playing saxophone. I played the tenor because that's the only instrument that they had available in the Teaneck High Band.
I wonder how many tens of thousands of clarinet players there are in the country, too, who started as you did because you were exposed to listening to a fellow like Benny Goodman back in the mid-30s.
Oh, yeah, sure. And, you know, remember, as there were different band leaders at different times who were outstanding soloists and instrumentalists, there would be a new wave of young, aspiring musicians on that instrument. Like there is, like today, I guess there must be 10 or 15 drummers and guitar players to one other instrumentalist of any type.
Yeah, I was thinking of drummers specifically when you mentioned that. That's true. And clarinet seems to have fallen out of favor at this point.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You're still fronting a band, though, and and playing some clarinet and some saxophone.
I tell you, the only thing I play in the last 2 years is the alto and the soprano sax. I don't play the flute and I don't play the clarinet. That's part, reason for that is, actually, when we conceived this orchestra back in the 53, I guess we started the band that went on Columbia first, the idea was to be the exact opposite from the trend of all kinds of sound gimmicks. Everybody was groping for a style. Everyone was experimenting, in there was practically a non-existent band business at that time, and then there was a little wave of success for a few years. But at that time, everyone was looking for unusual instrument combinations to make an identifiable sound. Now, our approach to this was quite the opposite, was to have a very legitimate, straightforward, uncluttered, ungimmicky approach. And that actually, the clarity, the lack of the piano in the rhythm section gave a unique feel and sound. The no redoubles in the saxophones gave it a much more like the old days band sound, because there was very little, even in the Goodman Band and in the old swing bands and the Basie Band, very little reed doubles in those days. It was like a brass section. And the use of the brass section was also very unusual for us to ever use any kind of a muted effect. There were some, but mostly open brass. If we wanted it soft, we wrote it lower. If we wanted it strong, we wrote it higher. But it was the clarity of the rhythm section and the punctuation of this brass band even though it might be very subdued, that gave it an identity.
Which of you, was it you or Les who hit the big time first as a section man with the big bands?
I think just about the same time we were playing in bands together. I was on the Spivak band for a very brief period before he was on it. He was on the Woody Herman band earlier than me. But while he was, I was with Red Norvo's band. Joe Marsali, you remember those names?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And Jack Jenny. Tommy Dorsey band I was on. I'm sure Les played with Tommy. I don't remember when he did, but I did. You know, we're talking about a lot of years ago, Arnold.
Yes, yes. You played with Jerry Wald, too.
I played with Jerry Wald, right, with some very, very good players who were ex-Artie Shaw and Goodman players.
Jerry Wald unfortunately suffered because everybody compared him with Artie Shaw for some reason.
He compared himself with Artie Shaw.
Oh, is that right?
Oh,
maybe
sure.
That's
very,
one of the reasons.
He was very serious about that.
He had Ray Conniff and Jerry Gray as arrangers at one time, I understand.
He spared nothing. He had absolutely the best of everybody, and we used to rehearse like crazy. I was pretty young then. We used to rehearse, I remember, after the job. They'd give us time to let the room be cleared out. And in those days, I lived over in Teaneck, New Jersey, and there wasn't terrific bus transportation between the George Washington Bridge and Teaneck. It's really such a short trip, but the bus route went all round about. I don't know if you're familiar with New Jersey, went through Englewood and so forth. So we'd finish rehearsing maybe at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I would go up, take a subway up to the George Washington Bridge, and then wait until the morning buses started traveling over to Englewood in the daylight.
It's a soft life, isn't it?
Well, those were tough days.
You also played with Bobby Byrne, and that's where you first met, I believe, a fellow named Charlie Albertine.
That's true. I had played with Bobby Byrne when he went into the service. Right, that's what happened. And Jack Jenny came to take the band over. We were playing down in Florida at the time, and it was really quite a nice band. And that was a very, very important, wonderful experience for me, working with Jack Jenny, as well as Bobby Byrne, who was an entirely different kind of a musician, both outstanding and two completely different directions.
Yes.
But Jack Jenny was one of the most musical and wonderful musicians that I ever was exposed to.
For anybody who doesn't remember, he did the solo with Artie Shaw on Stardust.
Yes. He used to play, but he was such an introverted guy that no one, I don't think that too many people really know how fantastically he played, because he would play even on the stand. He was such an uncommercial and an inhibited person that he would play with his back maybe to the audience, to the band, because he got a little feeling going there, and he also didn't want to be distracted with the audience, and it also strained him up. And he played things that I have never heard, I had never heard before or since. And unfortunately, a recording date never got, they never got not even a fraction of that guy's beautiful capabilities in playing. He was a, it was like a Bunny Berrigan kind of a player, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that there's any instrumentalist that I had more regard for. He played so soulful and so beautifully and technically so fantastic. It's just a shame that it's not on record. I also learned a lot about section playing from him. He had a concept very much like Red Norvo, where we played very subdued subtone saxophones, which is something that I've carried through always in our band. We play things that maybe have a lot of attack. And, as a matter of fact, I do, but that's unique to me. I play like brass attacks on the saxophone, a lot of, and the brass play with a lot of sharp attacks, like maybe like a sforzando, and then immediately come down very soft, which is one of the things that give the band its style.
Yes.
Give it its identity. That's a tough word for me. Identity. The feel that you can get, you can play very, very much more, a certain kind of swing. You can get into a certain kind of a groove playing very soft and swingy. It's a certain kind of a feeling that I enjoy playing with, and we do a lot of it.
That's Wrap Your Troubles in Dreams. We have a rather old album in our WTIC record file, And the album cover is sort of worn and frequently patched, and it reads this way. This dance collection introduces a bright new band to the Columbia label, that of Les Elgart. Well on his way to becoming the nation's college prom king, Elgart leads a modern ensemble that cheerfully reflects the sophisticated aspects of the tastes of young, dancing America. Modern, as used here, does not mean the often self-conscious distortion of the progressive bands. It simply means a good, solid beat divorced from the shackles of yesterday's music. The band's two-beat interpretations are conceived for dancing, but its harmonies and counterpoints are aimed at the ears of a musically discriminating and discerning generation. The sound of the Elgart Band is unmistakable. Brother Larry Elgart, one of the country's finest alto saxophonists, leads the sax section with its unusually wide range of dynamics and color. The section can be intimate, as in sophisticated swing. If thoughts of buying a new family car have been running through your mind, then here's something to think about. Russo's Chevrolet in Windsor Locks has a great selection of brand new Chevy Impalas and Caprices in a rainbow of colors, styles, and options. Let the experienced Russo salesman show you the dependable and comfortable features that have made the Impala one of America's favorite family cars. If you're looking for something even more luxurious, then you don't have to go a step further than the elegant Caprice. With its high styling and quality engineering, the Caprice offers you much more than just beautiful looks. See the Impala and the Caprice soon at Russo Chevrolet, where you can be sure of fair prices and excellent service. Your friends at Russo know that you want a dealer you can depend on, so they've made it their business to see that you're satisfied. Visit Russo Chevrolet soon and get together with people who care. That's Russo Chevrolet, across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. Just take I-91 to the Bradley exit, then your first exit to Russo Chevrolet. Now back to our conversation with Larry Elgart. And Larry, I'm very happy that you mentioned the long apprenticeship that both you and Les served with so many bands. Bunny Berrigan, Hal McIntyre, I guess.
That's right.
Raymond Scott.
That's true. I forgot that.
And, he sat in with some pretty good musicians there. You had, you were with people like Bernie Priven and Bobby Dukoff and Ray Sims and many others with
That's exactly right.
The Jerry Wald Band. And your brother sat in Raymond Scott's orchestra. Now, people look back at that as a Mickey Mouse band, but he sat in with Ben Webster, Charlie Shavers, Tony Mottola, and other people like that. I think it's important that people recall that it was a long time, because I think here's another case where Les and Larry Elgart became overnight successes back around the early 50s, but after 20 years of struggling that people didn't realize.
Sure. And even before that band in the 50s, we had a band, I think it was about 1947, when we were at the, we started at the Pelham Heath Inn, a little place up in the Bronx, not too far from the Glen Island Casino, which was another place we played. And that band lasted about 2.5 years. And they were very, very difficult years because there was the draft.
Yeah.
And players were going, leaving. We played at the Glen Island. We played at the Meadowbrook. We played a lot of miles. In those days, were theater jobs that you'd play for a week stand, you know, a week at a time. It was very, very difficult transporting ourselves around. We'd have to take trains and buses, and it was really tough
days.
They say
those theater dates were the toughest of all, too, because the movie would run for a couple of hours, and then you'd have to do your show, and then sit around for another couple hours, and then repeat the same show over again. And they say that really turned out to be an awful drag for the musician.
It was a terrific drag. It was a very, very hard job, and even in New York City, it was even more difficult. Because you did more shows. You started doing 5 shows and 6 shows, and that, and it's an awful routine. It's a terrible routine. Yeah, and that used to be showbiz, and it was tough.
Your band that you're talking about back in the mid 40s had a couple of pretty fair arrangers, if my information is correct. Was Nelson Riddle with that band?
Nelson Riddle. Actually, the basic library was written by Bill Finnegan. Many, many things from Nelson, who was in the Army at that time, for a part of that time, and he was sending his arrangements in. Guys like Manny Album, who was playing on the band, were also writing. Yeah, that was a terrific book. But it was a totally... It had no relationship to the band that we have here now.
Did you do any recordings at all with that band?
We did a thing for Bullet Records, the only recording we ever did. No, we did one for Musicraft, too, a couple of those things. They were very, very far from hits. We did a tune called I Lost My Heart in Hartford. You
Is
remember that,
a that
song?
Tony Bennett just changed the city and made a hit out of it later. that band did break up, though, around the late 40s, didn't it?
Yes.
It's always difficult to get into a subject like this, but it's not unheard of in the music business. Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey tried to co-lead a band for a long time, and it didn't work out. And I went to my source, George T. Simon, and he described Les Elgart as being a more lethargic band leader, and Larry as being spirited and... many of the fellows considered you the real leader of the band, and eventually it was perhaps this more than anything else which led to a separation of the brothers, and you each decided to go your own way. Is that fairly close to accurate?
I guess probably. So I certainly never thought about it like that. My big problem with Les, the thing that was difficult with the two of us, had nothing to do with personalities. It was more of a question of direction. He could have been a lot righter than I was, but I remember I resisted very much wanting to do rock things. His approach was one of a more commercial attitude, and there were things around happening while we were recording in the 50s, where things like Crew Cuts and Four Aces and all those people. That was the beginning of what turned into rock, you know. And he wanted to do it. And I opposed that terribly. I felt that we'd worked so hard to actually have a style and be something that had such... We had terrific acceptance on the DJ level and tremendous airplay. And I felt always that if we would depart from that, that it would be a curve to ourselves and to whatever fans we had. And he could have been right, was always looking more for a hit record, which never really came in with all of the albums that we've recorded. We had very, very respectable sales and it was a very good living. But there was never really a thing that could be considered a hit. It was just a good product that sold, made money for the record company, made money for us. And we had a lot of fans. And in the early days of the band, we were probably the number one college band as far as playing proms.
That's right, yes.
Because our band was engineered to be a funny word, but I mean, it was actually a dance band.
A good dance band indeed, and here's a good dance tune by the band that became the favorites for everybody's college prom, Larry Elgart's Orchestra, And You Turned the Tables on Me. Listening to an interview with Larry Elgart and some of the great Elgart music on a one-night stand with the big bands on WTIC in Hartford at 1080 on your dial. This is Arnold Dane, and a one-night stand is a monthly feature of WTIC Radio, with tonight's presentation being brought to you by WTIC and by Russo Chevrolet of Windsor Locks. You Turned the Tables on Me. That's from a brand-new two-record set which is being reissued, featuring Larry Elgart and the orchestra. Here's another cut from the same group. It's called Midnight Sun.
Thank you.
You and Les did not have a big dramatic breakup on the stage one night as Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey did, I take it. Yours was of a parting of a different philosophy.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Uh-huh. And
then, again, the awkward part of the two of us being on the stand, the job for a leader on the stand is, especially if they're both playing, is to try to keep some kind of continuity and feel the pulse of the people. And you have to quickly find what you're looking for in your own book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you've got two guys there who are trying to sort of share the task, there again you want to go in different directions at the same time. We never agreed as to what we should play at a particular set. That was an uncomfortable thing.
Yet, after your breakup, you did get back together again, didn't you?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
We did particularly in business because we became identified as Les and Larry, yes. You know.
I guess Tommy and Jimmy, the way they solved it eventually was for Tommy to take a set and for Jimmy then to take a set, and every now and then they'd play a number where the two of them would each play his little solo.
Yeah, well, we've done those things, you know, and when we did that, remember the big Jackie Gleason spectacular from Miami? Jackie wanted us both to be there, and so we worked it out, you know. Okay, Larry will tap off this tune, and Les will tap off this tune, and Larry will end this one. I mean, it actually gets kind of corny, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we never agreed on tempos.
Yes. It has to be, it's like marriage, which they say cannot be a 50-50 proposition. No. It's got to be at least 51-49.
Right.
You've had a long association with Columbia Records that was a very good one for the Elgart brothers.
Yes, that's true.
Do you have any idea how many albums you made?
I have somewhere in the 40s, somewhere like 44 albums all told. The newest thing we have on record, you're holding in your hand there, which is a reissue 2-record set from RCA on their Camden line. Isn't that an attractive cover?
That's very, very attractive. What's the instrumentation on these? How large a band did you have?
Exactly the same. We never changed the size of the band. The band
was
always
saxes.
5 saxophones. Yeah, 2 tenors, 2 altos, and a baritone.
Uh-huh.
2 tenor trombones and a bass trombone. And 4 trumpets. Rhythm guitar, bass, acoustical bass on these things.
Yeah.
And drums, and that's it.
Whose idea was it to not use a piano?
The first idea of not using a piano was a physical problem. This is really quite strange. I had a friend who I learned a lot about recording. In fact, whatever I knew about recording, I learned from Rudy Van Gelder, who used to and still does have a studio. He used to be an optometrist from Hackensack, New Jersey. And a lot of good jazz guys used to go to his place and record. And he wanted, because he did it strictly for his own kicks, built his own studio in his living room and had some very sophisticated equipment and was always expanding. And he wanted to get more musicians than get a better studio than his living room. You know, it had the... electronically, it was terrific. He did great things. I recorded some things there that were some of my favorites. So, wanting to experiment with bigger and larger groups, we went around looking for a room. So we went around, we found a room, a hotel. I don't think it's in business anymore. It was a hotel on Broadway and around 72nd Street. That had a terrific sound. We went around sounding the rooms acoustically, slapping our hands and listening to the reverb and looking at the physical makeup of the room. And we got permission to use this room and Sonia Hotel. We got permission to do this thing, so Rudy and Charlie and myself dragged all of this portable Ampex stuff that he had, and microphones and stands, up to this room. Now, the only thing they didn't have there was a decent piano. They had a little cocktail piano. Well, we knew where we were going to record. So for not actually having the piano, the things were written, with this thing that turned out to be such a blessing to me. You know, it was really a sound, and that's actually how we had no piano, and we liked it.
Isn't it interesting, then? We're going to feature the next number here by the Larry Elgard Orchestra, the band that prided itself on not having a piano, and we're going to do the theme song of a fellow who did have a piano, Vincent Lopez, and he played Nola for years. It's almost impossible to give your car all the care it needs to stay in top condition without professional help. That's why it's important to buy from a dealer who feels service is just as important as the sale. When you buy from Russo Chevrolet and Windsor Locks, you've found a dealer you can rely on. Besides employing a staff with over 70 years of Chevrolet experience, they've recently enlisted the aid of an electronic engine analyzer. This highly sensitive testing device attached to your engine will inform Russo's trained mechanics of any problems with your car, and all this is done right before your eyes at the touch of a button. This new addition to their already complete service department has made Russo unique in the area. Now they can offer you better, faster service than ever before, and that's something every car owner can appreciate. So, for quality cars and dependable service, visit Russo Chevrolet, just 10 minutes from Hartford. Take the Bradley exit from I-91, then the first exit to Russo Chevrolet, across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. Larry, how would you describe the Elgart sound? It was different, not really a shuffle rhythm.
Well, it was the fact that we played not like Jimmy Lunsford 2-beat exactly, because I always had in the back of my mind the rhythm playing of Freddie Green, who was with Basie. Mm-hmm. I like to play, it's a strange combination of a two-feel and a four-feel, actually. And it's very clear cut because piano players played fills. That was the style of the instrument, to play little runs and little fills. Here we had absolute clarity. We had like the bass playing emphasis on 1 and 3 and the guitar with equal emphasis on 2 and 4. And even though it was like, if you heard either one of them, and if you heard, if the balance wasn't exactly so on 2 and 4, it would sound very 2-beat, but there was a feel of 1, 2, 3, 4 with two guys playing in 2. And it had an unusual kind of a rhythmic feel and sound and identity. And in those days, Eddie Shaughnessy, who was playing most of those records and this one you have here, really played so beautifully with that, added his own thing, you know. played a lot of very delicate closed hi-hat sounds with sticks rather than just brushes.
We've talked with Larry Elgart at great length tonight about the way that marvelously attractive sound was produced. Now let's just listen to the sound again with Come Rain or Come Shine.
Thank you.
What is Larry Elgart doing today?
Well, I still play like 1, 2, 3 days a week with a band, that I'm proud to stand in front of, and I still feel the need to play. I would feel terrible if I couldn't play. It's a part of my expression that's important for me, although I do other things.
Do you take your band on the road at all?
Or most sure. Yes, I do. Whenever I play a date, I play with my band.
You take that band along.
Right.
Les Elgart now lives in Texas, I understand.
Yes, he does.
Where in Texas?
New Braunfels.
And what does he do? Is he playing at all?
He goes out and does dates. Sure, he'll do some dates around the area there. And does quite well. We sort of stay out of one another's territory, mm-hmm. unless there's some reason for us to both be in it, you know. Not for any other reason, and then we keep in touch on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a family, Larry?
I have two boys from a former marriage that are 17 and 20.
Are they musicians?
No, neither one of them are actually pursuing it, although they're both kind of musical, particularly the older boy, Brock, was on his way to becoming a rock drummer and then gave it up. He's interested in recording. He's got good ears. He's interested in that, and he's working in associated lines, like for a record company and record distributor. And, you know, he's learning the business from the whole outside. You know.
Yes.
And the youngest boy did play the flute and the clarinet and the guitar and the bass. And at this point, he's in his last year up in a school in Maine Central Institute, 17-year-old, and he's mm-hmm. going to go to college next year. And he said that it really wasn't, he didn't love it that much. I don't really know what he's going to play. He's a nice boy, Brad. He likes that New England country, and I think he's probably going to stay there. I think he'll probably go right back there when he gets out of college and live there.
That's great. It'll give you all the more cause to come up and visit us in New England.
Oh, yes,
all
indeed.
The more frequently. Larry, I think we could go on talking about the music business, past and present and future, too, for a good long time. But we'll instead just listen to a few more of the selections, if we can, from the album. With our thanks to you for giving us this time today. We've enjoyed meeting you.
I've enjoyed it very much. Thank you, Arnold.
Most identified by this selection, Heart of My Heart. Thank you for joining us on a one-night stand with the big bands. Our location and studio engineer was Bob Chirego. This program was produced and edited by Brian Hartnett. Join us next month for our April one-night stand with the big bands. Tonight's session has been brought to you by WTIC and by Russo Chevrolet across from Bradley International, where you can count on satisfaction in sales and service. Our thanks to our special guest star, Larry Elgart, and thanks to all of you for joining us. Till the April edition of A One Night Stand, this is Arnold Dean.